Hi, my name is Ricky Adamson, and welcome to Vista Higher Learning's podcast series, The Language Imperative. Vista's commitment for the past 25 years has been providing language solutions. We're proud to sponsor and share the work of those organizations, institutions, and individuals that serve and strengthen language education for all. As the preeminent language and literacy publisher in the United States, Vista's singular focus is empowering you as a language educator with the tools and research-based knowledge that you need to meet the needs of all learners. Whether you're guiding students in learning a new language, improving an additional language, or perfecting their native language, Vista is for you. Thank you for letting us share this podcast with you. Welcome, everyone. Today we have with us Dr. Leslie Baldwin. So, Dr. Baldwin, welcome to our podcast. I'm excited to visit with you a little bit today. Would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Certainly. Thank you. I'm excited to be here today. So I am the World Languages Director in Winston-Salem for Scythe County in North Carolina, and I've been in that role for 21 years. I'm also the Executive Director of the Southern Conference on Language Teaching. That's a regional professional organization, and I enjoy that quite a bit. And I do a few other things at some local universities here around Winston-Salem and Greensboro and enjoy all of that work.
Great. Very impressive resume. I used to be in the South myself. I mean, I'm out in Los Angeles now, but I'm originally from the South. So I used to go to Sculpt a lot. I miss getting to do that. It was always a great conference. And I later, you know, after I left teaching, I also went into a director role. So I understand what it's like to wear so many hats. But today you're here and you're going to talk a little bit to us about advocacy. Why would you say that advocacy is important for language educators?
I think there are multiple reasons that it's an important topic, and maybe not one that we discuss often. We're usually talking about pedagogy and strategies and engaging students and all those sorts of things, which of course are extremely important. But we have other roles as educators, and one of those is as an advocate for our profession, for our content, and for what we do. And some of that is to help with recruitment and building enrollment numbers. I know that in my district and in most places, language courses are electives. And so jobs, positions are dependent upon enrollment. And so we have to actively recruit for students to take courses, and especially to take courses beyond the typical high school level one, level two, that might be some kind of requirement that students are fulfilling, but to really stay with the language and take those upper levels, go into the AP, the IB courses, so that they're really and truly developing the language skills and not just, you know, doing that tiny little bit where you really, that's, you know, those are the people that say, oh, I took it and I don't remember anything. And, you know, well, if that's all you did, then no, you don't, right? So that recruitment building numbers is an important piece, but it's also about having a seat at the table, so to speak, educationally, and to educate others about what our programs are really like, what our classes are really like, what is actually going on in the language classroom that might be and likely is different than what many administrators or parents or board members or whomever it might be experienced in their own language study. And so it's really important to get that message out and to let a wide variety of stakeholders know and understand this is what language classrooms are like now, that we're about proficiency and communication and building these skills and using language for meaningful purposes, that it's not about rote verb conjugation and memorization all the time, that we really want kids applying skills, and that the language courses do so much more than just give memorized language. And so that advocacy is an important part of that.
And you know, that gave me some flashbacks of some things myself, which reiterates what you're saying, in that a lot of times it seems as if people in the community, even people within schools, have this false idea that in world languages, we're in there making crepes or piñatas all the time, and they don't see the value in what we actually bring to the table. And this also goes along with it, I think you'll agree, is that a lot of times it seems as if some of those that are decision makers farther up the chain. I heard this from one of my colleagues when I was still in Texas. She said those were the ones who had to only learn things by rote and memory back in the day. And so they have this perception of what world language is, and now they're making these decisions based on that perception. So yes, I would have to wholeheartedly agree that advocacy is extremely important. And with it being so important, what does that mean? So for language teachers that may be listening, what does it mean for them to act as advocates?
Sir, I think that's a great question. I think sometimes when educators hear that word, maybe it sounds a little scary, or, you know, I'm not an advocate. I teach my students, right? Or I don't really know what that means, and I'm not sure I want to be involved in that. Advocacy doesn't necessarily mean marches and posters and things like that. Advocacy, in a more broad sense, is about promoting our programs, promoting the profession, promoting the value of what we do to what you were just saying, and ensuring that many stakeholders see and understand that. Because most of our administrators probably were not language teachers before they went into, you know, becoming an assistant principal, principal, whatever it may be, and don't have that background. Same for parents, board members, community in general, depending upon the area where you are, that kind of thing. But in general, again, they might not really have a good picture of what is it we do, what is it we're asking students to do, and what are the kinds of things that students gain from being in language classes, because it's not just about the language. And so it is about just promoting our programs and showing off, this is what kids are doing, this is what kids are learning, and this is why these classes are valuable.
Yeah, and you know, that I think will put a lot of teachers at ease, because I do think many people think it's showing up with posters at the school board meeting and doing some kind of protest, but really it is highlighting what you're doing in class, what your kids are learning, and showing, at least in my situations I've been in, that to me, world language is where every other content came together. And so it's not so much that we're this outlier. We actually are the ones that bring it all together. Sometimes people don't seem to realize that. As far as, you know, teachers are thinking now, I'm sure, as they're listening, like, okay, what can I do? What are some things I can do with my students? What are some of those simple things that they can do to promote the value of language programs in their schools and in their communities?
Sure. I think one thing to remember is that the best advocacy is proactive rather than reactive. So not waiting for positions to be in jeopardy or a program to be in jeopardy and due to budget cuts or whatever it might be, but being proactive in the sense that it doesn't matter what the budget and position discussions are, this is what we do with our program. So it might just be things like inviting administrators or board members or district communications media staff to the classroom or to events so that people can see this is what we're doing in these classes. Invite those stakeholders to honor society inductions. Show off that kids are taking upper levels and having success and doing special things with this language program. Show off work. Put it in the halls. Put it on social media, of course, paying attention to whatever regulations and policies might be in place. But as possible and as allowed, put those things out there so that it's public, so that it can be seen. One of our schools has student artwork that mirrors artists from the various cultures along the language hallway. It's very visible, it's very attractive, and it pulls you in and says, hey, this is a cool place to be. These are the kinds of neat things that we do. And student work is constantly displayed on the bulletin boards and in the hallways to see what they're doing. Maybe have events with multiple classes, let's say in the media center. There's a school I work with that does an art unit where they study different artists and all these things and then create their own artwork in those styles. And they end up with this really great exhibition in the media center where the other classes have to come and have conversations with their peers about the artist, what they learned, what they created, all those things. And they have to do all of this in the language. So it's a great incorporation of language, of culture, of all these things. But then when you invite other people to it from outside, they see, oh, wow, these are cool things that our students are doing. You can't just sit there and conjugate verbs to be able to do this kind of work. And you really see the students' different talents and interests. Maybe there's a way to have students use their language for some kind of service opportunity. I was talking with some sign language teachers the other day. One has her students interpret the school play that she has students that are interpreting the play and the production. Another said her students come to her and, you know, they have after school jobs and things like that. And they're using their sign language to communicate with customers in various ways. And so she can put that on social media and say, this is what kids are doing. So just any way that you can put it out there and make it public, this is what's happening in our classes. And those are some pretty simple things to do, some of which take a little more time than others. Some of them really don't take much time at all, but can make, you want to make what's happening in your classroom public, visible. If they don't know what's going on in there, then that's when what you were saying, people make decisions without knowing what's going on and what the class is really like.
Yeah. And, you know, I really love that idea of sign language students being there at the play and signing. What a great tool. The community is sitting right there watching it. And it also reminds me of that old saying, if they won't come to you, go to them. And that's, in a sense, what we're doing. You know, we're bringing it to them so that they see. For teachers who may be saying, that's all well and good, but my administrator, you know, doesn't support me. Would you say that maybe if you have an ally that's a fellow teacher, start there, get that teacher to come observe you and then get them to also be an advocate, you know, kind of in a domino effect, one leads to the other and so forth?
I think so. I think definitely, you know, find allies wherever you may find them, right? And build on that. And it may also just be, you know, even if it's the, you know, my administrator doesn't support me. Well, that doesn't mean you can't send them student work and continue to try to show this is what kids are doing. Like, even if they won't come to the classroom or come to an invitation to an event, I've had teachers send me links to Google folders of student presentations so that I can see what they're up to. And they send that to those administrators as well. You might not be able to make that administrator watch it, but you can keep sending.
That's true.
So, but yeah, I think definitely use allies where you can find them.
Yeah. And never give up. They may not come, but never give up. So how can language teachers demonstrate the impact of their program to the stakeholders, to all the stakeholders?
I think that's a great question. A lot of times language and sometimes other elective teachers feel like they have a hard time showing impact because they don't have the traditional data that other teachers might have. They can't say that my end of grade, end of course test scores rose by a certain percent or my students showed growth on this standardized test. They don't always have that, but they do have other data and other things to share. So it might be about enrollment data. It might be about the numbers of students that are taking those upper levels in high school, staying in level 3, level 4, moving on beyond those. It could be about the number of students in honor societies or students that are receiving awards for various things. You know, have your student, there are all kinds of state competitions for language things, national competitions for language things with different associations. Have students submit their writing, their speaking, whatever it might be. We've had students win French poetry awards and German awards at the State German Day, all kinds of things because student work is submitted or teachers support students in doing these things. And that's a great way to publicize. This is what students can do when they get involved with these languages. And sometimes it might even just be meaningful anecdotes. So it's students helping a newcomer to school because the newcomer doesn't speak English well and students are able to help that new student figure out where they're going and what they need and what classes are like or make them feel welcome just because they can speak that student's language even a little bit, right? Even enough just to welcome them and introduce themselves or whatever it might be. Maybe it's the using the language in the community, like the sign language teacher was telling me the other day about helping their customers in a restaurant. It might be making connections with other classes where you have classes communicating with one another through written, through spoken, whatever it might be, language. And maybe you have stories about students using their language beyond graduation. Whether it's in further study, whether it's in a profession, what maybe they got a managerial position after graduation because they had some language skills. So any of those kinds of anecdotes and stories that make it purposeful and meaningful can be impactful.
Yeah, it seems like that's also where the syllabi literacy can go hand in hand with advocacy to show what students have achieved and what they can do as well, which I know that's becoming more and more prevalent, that syllabi literacy across the country.
Most definitely, as a way for students to really show these are skills that I have.
Mm-hmm. And what are the benefits of language study that teachers can focus on if they're trying to figure out, okay, do I focus on this? Do I focus on that? What would you say to those teachers in their advocacy efforts?
Certainly. I was actually just talking with some teachers about this earlier this week. In our messaging about this, I think we have to go beyond the point about communication and being able to communicate with a wide variety of people and help you with travel and that sort of thing. Because frankly, that's not necessarily a goal or a realistic option for a lot of people to have that those kinds of travel or study abroad opportunities. While I think that should be something available to every student everywhere, it's not necessarily. And so communication for communication's sake is maybe not always the best argument. I think it's important to understand who is our audience and what kind of message do they want to hear that helps resonate with them and make it seem like, yes, this is an important and meaningful thing. And so while the communication skills obviously are extremely important, and as language educators, we think it's very, very valuable that we can communicate with others in their language and how important that is. But there's so many other pieces we can talk about too. Connections to literacy are extremely important and might resonate more with administrators or with educators from other backgrounds, more so than just that communication piece. Because if we can talk about how language study helps develop comprehension and writing skills, how it helps develop our English skills or our whatever our native language might be, how it helps our understanding of other languages, and being intentional about that and showing how we use literacy, reading, writing strategies in our language classrooms that then transfer to English language arts classrooms, social studies, science, whatever it might be, the more we can show that, then we're showing that there is value beyond just the language sake. The connections to the soft skills, you know, that's very important and very prominent right now, is that our graduates really need these soft skills, the communication skills, collaboration, problem solving, critical thinking, empathy, that's what employers want. Well, they learn all of those things in a language class. Like you were saying, that's where everything comes together. And we have to address all of those soft skills in a language class. And so again, being intentional about that and being able to really show and say that this is how students approach these skills in language classes. You mentioned the Seal of Biliteracy. The Global Seal organization and site actually has a great poster that shows those soft skills and how multilinguals build those skills through language study. That's a really great advocacy resource.
That's something that I guess every teacher could have and place outside their room on the bulletin board. You mentioned something just a moment ago, and it kind of brought a smile to my face because it reminded me of one of the last years that I was still in the classroom. My principal called me to the office. So I got called to the office. I sat down and she wanted to know explicitly how in my French classroom I was helping support the school's literacy goals and math goals. And I was able to show her. I was able to actually give evidence, not just say, well, we do this, we do that, but I actually had evidence of it that I could give to my administrator. And I think that's another, you've touched on that too. And I think back to that and just holding on to those things. In those instances when an administrator wants the evidence, you already have it. Even if you have it in a file in your file cabinet, you can pull it out and say, sure, I can show you right now exactly what's going on. And then that's also, to me, a perfect invitation to say, I'd love for you to come in the classroom and watch us do this. You know, I think that's another way that helps, a door in for advocacy, I believe. Well, what are specific tools or resources teachers can use to speak the language of stakeholders? Because sometimes we may be saying things, but they don't have the same lingo that we have. So what would you say to that?
Definitely. So again, it's about recognizing your audience. Who is the stakeholder and what is it that they want to hear? Is it administrators? Is it board members? Is it parents? Is it potential students? What do they need to hear to understand the value of the program and the classes? And so you can't just use reasons that appeal to you as a language educator, right? There are lots of ones that appeal to me, but you have to think about what that group or that person really wants to hear. Do they want to hear about higher test scores and achievement going up? Do they want to hear about increased enrollment and how that can help with teacher positions? Do they want to hear that it doesn't cost money? there's not money involved. Maybe they want to hear that it's just something engaging and interesting if it's potential students. That long-term goal of how you use language might not be so appealing to a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old. They need a little FOMO, a little fear of missing out. Like, if I don't take this class, all the fun I'm going to miss out on, or, you know, exciting things. Maybe it's about a way to earn more money or to get a job after graduation. So you have to think about what message is it, what's going to attract this person or make them understand the value of the program, and then find ways to address those interests. So if it's administrators and your evaluation, or like you were saying, an administrator saying, show me, talk to me about how you do this, or, you know, how do you meet these parts of your evaluation instrument? Well, then that's, like you said, you need to be ready with evidence of that. So know your evaluation instrument and be able to talk about how you address these things. In North Carolina, we actually have a tool for teachers and administrators that takes the teacher evaluation instrument and the TEL guides, the Teaching for Effective Language Learning guides, and kind of marries the two to show this is how language teachers address these aspects of the evaluation instrument and can help teachers and administrators with those specifics. The same thing with the soft skills. You can use those documents to really show intentionally and be able to talk with specific language about how your class supports and teaches those skills. If you need data and research, if that's what people want to see, because sometimes they're not good with the anecdotes, they want numbers. Research, right? Actville has a lot of resources on their website, and the Language Connects Foundation has great resources on their website that you can just take and share. You don't have to do a huge, wide Google search for that. Maybe have students do the recruiting. If it's about recruiting students, we'll have your students create videos, posters, social media, again, as that's allowed, to really show, hey, this is why I take this class, and you should too. Kinds of things. So, you know, any way you can share those messages, maybe the piece about jobs, that language can be a vehicle for advancement in a wide range of professions, whether it's trade skills or other professions, that having those language skills makes you the candidate that gets chosen over someone who doesn't, or gets you the promotion that someone else doesn't, because you can communicate with a variety of, whether it's other, you know, workers or clients and customers, all those sorts of things.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one thing that goes along with that, which also kind of made me smile because it brought back memories of my classroom and teaching, is when not just students, but parents, colleagues, whoever say, when am I ever going to use this? And I feel as if part of advocacy, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is about changing that question to how am I going to use this? Mm-hmm. Not when, but how. Mm-hmm. Because the opportunities will come along to use it.
Exactly. Because again, it's not about language for language's sake. It's about what can this language do for me, or like you said, how can I use it? So regardless of what my intended field is or interests are, there are ways that language connects to that. Because one of the things that we have to remember is that in language classes, it's not just about the language, because we have to have something to talk about, read about, write about. And so that is where all those other content areas come into play. And then that's where the skills come into play post-graduation, whether you're going straight to a profession, to higher ed, to the military, whatever it might be, there are ways that language can serve you and that you can serve others through that.
I remember once a specific time, and I used it in class to really highlight, you never know. In the small town I was teaching in, my hometown, and I was the French teacher, one of the French teachers, and students saying, I'm never going to use that here. Well, they happened to be in Subway getting a sandwich one night, and a couple traveling through from Quebec came through. And I said, see, you know, you're going to use it. You just have to be ready to use it, and you'll use it here. Just be ready for it. And I think that's something that is just a small bit of advocacy too, but it can go a long way. Just those opportunities, because students do get excited when they actually get to use it.
Absolutely.
And then they're telling people about it. And I know probably that, you know, we have teachers out there, and we know teachers have a lot on their plates, right? But they may feel a little anxious about the idea of being an advocate. So what would you say to those teachers to help calm them or to encourage them?
For sure. Exactly. Because we need one more thing, right? None of us have time for something else. So again, I would say, remember that advocacy doesn't equal going around with a bullhorn and being in people's faces, or even taking extra time. Start small. Start with something that doesn't take a great deal of time and effort, such as just inviting that administrator to your class, inviting them to something going on, or even sending them the student work, like I was saying before. Send a link to the presentations that students created, just so they can see what students are doing. That really does not take much time and is not difficult to do. And then maybe do your own reflection about how you intentionally address those literacy skills or the soft skills. Find some ways to create some talking points about those for your next post-observation discussion, maybe, so that you're ready for that conversation. Because again, if it's that proactive piece as opposed to reactive. So if the principal calls me to the office and wants to know how my class is helping to meet those strategic goals for the school, like happened to you, I need to be ready for that conversation. Because if that catches me off guard, that might be a little difficult, right? So I want to be ready for that. And honestly, that doesn't take too long. You know, it really doesn't. But just a few minutes with maybe, again, your evaluation instrument, or maybe it's the school's strategic plan, whatever it might be, where you really can say, here are specific things that we do in my class that helps contribute to literacy skills, that helps contribute to problem-solving skills, to critical thinking skills. If my class is 90% plus in the target language, as it should be, for both for me and the students, there's a lot of critical thinking going on a lot of the time, as students are really trying to apply language, as they're trying to figure out, what is she asking me to do? What is happening here, right? But they're constantly processing and taking that language in and then trying to do something with it. That's a lot of critical thinking going on just by being in the class, right? Not to mention the assignments and projects and performance assessments and things they're going to have to do to actually apply those skills. And so if you can intentionally show, this is how students are reaching upper levels of Bloom's taxonomy, or, you know, this is how they're using higher order thinking skills, it doesn't take too long to sit and reflect about that just a little bit, maybe make a note in your lesson plans, whatever it is, so that you are ready for those conversations. And then again, that being intentional about sharing student work, I think that's huge. And again, does not take a lot of time, does not take a lot of effort. Whether it's maybe you have a teacher, you know, you have to have a teacher website or a Canvas page or whatever it might be. Highlight student work there. If they've done, I don't know, something in Canva, or, you know, created something digital in that way, highlight those there. They've created something physical, put it out there in the hall. If you have a bulletin board outside your room, have the students figure out what's going to go on there. There's one school I go to that every time I go, they have different student work displayed outside their room. It's on the lockers outside the rooms. It's on bulletin boards. It's on stapled to the little corkboard strips along the walls. And every time I see different work that students have created that shows ways they have applied language skills in meaningful ways. And even that just speaks volumes. And again, doesn't take a lot of time and effort.
And, you know, too, those teachers, a lot of times, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, but in my current role with Vista, teachers come up to me a lot and they ask because they want to start doing professional development, not just participating in it, they want to provide it. And one of the things I learned early on in my career, I was a French teacher, but one year I had to teach 10th and 12th grade English. I'm not certified in that, but I taught it. And my aha moment was when I realized that the same strategies I was using to teach French, I also used to teach English language arts, whether it was composition, literature, grammar, even. And that was another piece that I saw as advocacy, because once I started, and thankfully my administrator was very supportive of me, and she asked me to provide professional development for other teachers. And being able to share those sent a whole new message of what goes on in a language classroom. And so that's something else I would say that teachers that are interested in that sort of thing can do. But for those, you know, that aren't interested in that, I guess it's those things you said, and it's work smarter, not harder. That cliche, you don't have to do a whole lot. You're already doing it. Now it's show it.
Show it. Show it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So Dr. Baldwin, what would you say for teachers listening, administrators listening, anyone listening, what's the biggest point you would like them to take away from what they're hearing today?
I think maybe a couple of things. One, we all need to be advocates, every single one of us, for our profession, for our students, for our programs, for our classes. We all have to be advocates for those things in some way. So I think that's the main thing. And then to back that up is that thought about that advocacy does not have to be difficult, and it doesn't have to be time consuming and take a great deal of effort, that there are all these little simple things that you can do that are advocacy and that help promote your programs and help educate people on the value of your programs.
I agree. All of the things you've said today really even have me thinking, and, you know, in my role at Vista Higher Learning, you know, I'm still in the field of education. I may not be in a classroom, but ways that I can still be an advocate. And so I would encourage any teachers listening who maybe they're retired or maybe they've moved out of the classroom, there's still a place for you to be able to advocate, you know, as well. So that's been a very inspiring conversation for me today, Dr. Baldwin. I thank you for taking the time today to visit with us, and I look forward in the future to hopefully continuing this conversation.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. As an educator, you have the power to reimagine and reshape education. Vista Higher Learning is committed to giving you the best programs, resources, information, and support to ensure that your students succeed in school and in life. We are committed to being your partner in education, and thank you for letting us be there for you and your students. For more information about Vista solutions for your K-12 classroom, visit vistahigherlearning.com.